May it please the court. I'm representing Joshua Hernandez. My name is William Capriola. In the district court opinion, Judge Breyer seems to agree that it would have made a difference if trial counsel had found all the records that I found showing that my client was insane at the time of the crimes. He says, petitioner's entire case rose and fell on the insanity issue. It was his only defense, and that's accurate. And he also says, it seems quite possible that these records would have altered the result of this trial. I think it's pretty much indisputable that they would have altered the result of the trial. Here they had three experts who testified. Well, two of them testified that he was insane at the time, classically insane. The prosecution presented no experts, nothing, and only poked holes in the expert's opinion. He was a very good prosecutor and a very good arguer, and was able to convince the jury that he was malingering because the only evidence that they had was whatever came out of the defendant's own mouth, because they never bothered getting any records.
Well, counsel, once again, this is a state habeas, and our focus on the case, of course, is more narrow. What precisely is contrary to the requirements of Strickland? What did the state court do that violated Strickland here?
What the state court did was they... Well, it was affirmed in a postcard denial by the California Supreme Court. So we have to what Richter says, you look to see, you know, whether there are any reasonable basis. The district court said, well, there's no clearly established federal law here. The district court judge looks past. Our argument here as to AEDPA is that Strickland is the law that needs to be followed. That's
all right,
it.
But there were four pieces of evidence. There was the Tascadero, there was the Alaska confinement, the Social Security determination, and the San Antonio hospital. And all of that came in. So where is the ineffective assistance?
None of that came in.
Well, I mean, all right, all of it was identified.
Actually, most of it was not identified even by trial counsel. Trial counsel did nothing but leave the case up to the experts. Basically, the district court here found, and the attorney general here is arguing, that in a case, an insanity case, where your only defense is not guilty by reason of insanity, the attorney has no responsibility to do anything because the United States Supreme Court has never...
Well, counsel, that's not quite right. I'm sorry. It's not quite accurate to say counsel did nothing here. Counsel acquired expert testimony. Counsel actually succeeded in having this person committed and not even tried for some period of time, so apparently was successful, at least initially, in pursuing that there was mental illness. And, you know, the cases that are in your briefs tend to be cases where nobody even looked at an insanity defense or got any experts, and really this is a matter of degree, it seems to me. The counsel did quite a bit, and the question is whether the quite a bit was so deficient that no reasonable jurist could conclude that it was sufficient.
I think you can, because of the result of the case. I mean, you can, basically the way it reads is that you can leave, and a defense attorney can leave his entire case in an insanity case up to the experts.
And well, in a sense, isn't that true? I mean, if you're not a psychiatrist yourself, you hire a respected psychiatrist who's bona fides are not questioned here, and you say, help me out here. Here's what I'm giving you. Isn't it a little bit up to the expert to say, well, I need more? Is there anything more?
I totally agree with you. But see, in this case, what happens is that in a case like this, where the guy is definitely psychotic, the experts said this is a no-brainer. Basically, the guy walks in, this guy is insane.
They hired three experts. They gave the experts the Atascadero discharge summary, the police reports, and the weird writings of your client. And I guess I'm not sure why it would be impossible for a reasonable jurist, which we have to say the California courts were,
sure,
to say that that was enough to meet the mm-hmm. performance prong.
If I could just explain this quickly. If you leave it up to the experts, now the experts can make a determination, because they're making a medical determination, a psychological determination. This person was insane at the time. Now that isn't necessarily going to convince a jury. When you have a prosecutor in there who's saying, well, they just based it all on what the defendant said. They didn't bother getting into the records. And the jury bought this. Now, your job as a defense attorney is not just to get two experts to say that, and the expert can make that determination maybe in minutes. You know, they said this is a no-brainer. But you're going to want to say, well, I have a prosecutor here. He's not calling any experts. I have experts. What's he going to do? He is basically going to say my client was faking. So you have to, as an attorney, you have to refute that. And how do you do that? You show that.
There are a number of ways to do it. One thing is you have your witnesses say, you know, part of my job is to figure out who's faking, and I think he's not.
They did that. But yet still, they were able to believe the prosecutor because he was really good. What happened after this case is when my client was in San Quentin, they forgot to give him his medication, and he plucked out both of his eyes. He is blind. This guy is definitely insane. There is no question about this. And all we're talking, and this prosecutor, if you read his closing argument, I'm sorry. All he does is say that these experts basically fell for it. They fell for it. And he was really good, and the defense attorney was really bad. Even though he hired the experts. But against this guy and this jury, these crimes were bizarre. The jury, you know, juries are normal people. Anybody wants this guy to go to jail. He's a lunatic. You know, he walks into a house and he starts knifing people who he doesn't even know. Anyway, the crimes are bizarre. He's bizarre. And the prosecutor was able to convince the jury that this guy should go to prison. Where he ends up, you know, it was recorded on videotape. It's like one of the most horrific things ever that what happened in this case. But they were successful here. And so the question for AEDPA purposes, basically Justice Breyer seemed to agree that what the attorney did here, he said, this is ridiculous. However, for AEDPA purposes, I don't find a case on point. So I think the real issue in this court is Strickland good enough? No, and I think it is because an IAC, an ineffective assistance of counsel claim, is always a fact-bound inquiry. There's always going to be a different case. You're never going to find a case exactly on point. And there have even been there is actually an Eighth Circuit case cited in one of my briefs, which basically says, yeah, in an insanity case, we look to capital cases, and I can give you the site if you'd like. We look to capital cases, and by analogy, because basically they're the same thing. When you don't investigate somebody's background, it's ineffective, even in a even if you put experts on the stand. And so you look to do, in a Strickland analysis, and what all the cases say, and it's very basic, is that either you have to do a reasonable investigation, or you've got to make a reasonable have a reasonable explanation as to why you didn't do it, or you know you have to. I'm sorry.
Well, just take the Social Security disability record. Mm-hmm. Those were referred to by one of the witnesses, were they not?
I think they were, yeah. But really, there are no Social Security records. They referred to them, but they didn't say it was because of mental illness that he was getting.
Okay, but we're focusing on the ineffective assistance here.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
As I look at the record, and I want you to correct me if I'm wrong, defense counsel was aware of the Social Security determination.
He was, yeah. Right. Yeah, yes.
What's your argument there? Then?
Well, because if he would have produced even one of these records, the prosecutor's entire argument is...
Which records?
The Social Security records, the Alaska records.
But they were in evidence, or at least they were referred to. Were they not?
They refer to the fact that he's getting Social Security, and they refer to the fact that in Alaska...
Based on disability.
No, not based on disability. Basically that he, yeah, but maybe based on disability, but not because of mental incompetence, not because of, for mental reasons. The Social Security records are, they lost the entire file by the time I got the case, so I don't know when they did, and but there is none. But the other records, that the prosecutor's argument here was that the defense showed nothing, that he didn't make this up while he was found incompetent to stand trial in this case. He was incompetent for 8 months in this case. And the prosecutor's theory, and this is what he tells the jury, he saw a video about insanity defense, and he comes up with this whole thing. And if he would have produced one record saying that he's been schizophrenic since age 14, that would have blown it out of the water.
Thank
one
you, record. Counsel. Thank your time has expired. We'll hear from the state.
Thank you, Your Honors, and may it please the Court, Renee Chacon for Respondent Warden. We ask the Court to affirm the District Court. My opposing counsel misspoke. He claims the pivotal question is whether Strickland is good enough. Now, Richter tells us that the pivotal question is whether the state court's application of Strickland was unreasonable.
Well, it seems to me quite a close case. If we didn't have the sort of double deference here, it would seem to me that you'd be in a tough spot, because this person is really obviously crazy, and counsel should have been prepared to deal with a claim of recent fabrication. But on the other hand, we have this double deference. So what is the best case scenario for this being an adequate performance on the part of trial counsel?
Well, it's clear, Dr. Soper, there were three defense witnesses presented, two psychologists, one psychiatrist, Dr. Soper, with 20-plus years of experience. He testified at trial when pressed by the prosecutor that he didn't need the records. He had enough. It was so obvious, it was staring him in the face, that this person was insane today, and he opined was insane years earlier when the underlying crimes were committed. A second defense psychologist who interviewed the defendant for 90 minutes had the defendant's most recent writings that occurred near the time of the underlying crimes, and had him undergo a series of psychological tests, two at least, opined that he also believed that the test reported that the defendant was insane at the time of the crimes.
So then when the prosecutor says this defendant just pulled the wool over their eyes and made all this up recently, why wasn't counsel deficient for failing to bring up the childhood records showing that this was by no means a recent phenomenon or a recent fabrication?
Well, attacks on whether mental health professionals have considered malingering, that's nothing new. It's a standard process.
Of course it is, but there was material here that could contradict the malingering.
There's no question.
And it wasn't brought up, and that's my problem.
Counsel could have done more. Absolutely. Counsel could have done more. That's not what Strickland and Richter require. Counsel made a strategic decision to rely on his experts.
Was there a strategic decision not to go look at his past record?
Petitioner did not obtain a declaration from trial counsel.
Yeah, that.
The best we can do is take Dr. Soper's testimony, the two defense witnesses' testimonies, who said they didn't need it anymore. They had enough.
But what do we know about what they did have? I mentioned at the beginning that there were four sets of records, Atascadero, Alaska, the Social Security Disability Determination, and San Antonio. Is there any indication that these materials were made available or known to the witnesses that
The defendant himself self-reported, Atascadero was fresh. He had recently undergone a series of before trial, mid-trial.
Were the Atascadero records available to any of the witnesses?
Parts of an Atascadero discharge summary.
Right. They got the discharge summary.
That's correct. And inferentially, there was more from Atascadero available should either party have.
But your argument is that the witness was knowledgeable about the discharge.
Yes.
And there was no requirement that he has to go behind that.
The defense psychiatrist could have asked for more and did not. The defense psychiatrist from the self-reports knew about Alaska, knew about the other hospital placement. I cannot say that he knew about the disability reports.
The declarations from Dr. Soper and from, I forget who else, but the one from Dr. Soper suggests that he did not have these materials except for the discharge summary and that they would have had a big effect on his ability to discuss the mental
correct.
State at the time of the crime.
That's correct, but he knew about them. He knew about the prior placements, and he didn't ask counsel to obtain them. He explains on cross-examination he didn't think he needed them. He didn't want to waste his own time. He didn't want to waste county funds. That's his testimony on cross.
But none of that has much to do with how counsel responded to the claim of recent fabrication, because it seems to me that even if Dr. Soper didn't need any more, the jury may have needed more by saying, okay, well, here's something from when this person was 14 years old that shows the same thing, so made up.
These materials at best would have corroborated both defense experts' opinions that this defendant was not malingering. Defense
which
counsel
seems to be the basis for the jury's verdict.
Well, the credibility of defense psychiatrists was before them and was attacked by the prosecutor. Yes, also what they had before them was the defendant's own goal-oriented acts were also the writings that defense psychiatrists claimed showed unequivocally that this man was insane at the time of the attacks. And they could decide for themselves whether these defense experts who had access to the defendant 2 years after the fact were correct or not. At bottom, the defendant's own goal-oriented activities.
What does that mean, goal-oriented activities? What are you trying to say?
I'm saying that he wasn't insane, that he wasn't acting as a result of a psychosis, that he was criminally responsible for his acts, because there was a basis, there was a rational basis for his acts, for the attacks on the defendants, on the victims. That he wasn't insane at the time he committed the acts. That's what I'm saying.
What was that rational basis? What was his goal that he was trying to further?
Well, there were women who were attacked. Underlying the prosecutor's point was that there was some sort of sexual goal at bottom of his as a result of, or that produced the attacks. Nothing new. A commonsensical argument. Here, petitioner has pointed to no clearly established federal law that would have required counsel to seek out information that was not needed by his defense experts. And this is a guilt phase determination. My opponent's arguments all come from death penalty cases that require more of counsel. This is a guilt phase determination, and the U.S. Supreme Court has not directed more is required as a matter of law.
I thought he was choking one of the victims.
That's correct, Your Honor.
That was goal-oriented?
Yes. Unless the court, unless I can answer more questions from the panel.
No further questions.
Thank you,
counsel. The case just argued will be submitted for decision, and the court will adjourn.
Thank you.